Hey, what's up, everybody? You're listening to the Enterprise Architecture Radio. If you're thinking about organizational complexity and agility, if you're concerned about operational efficiencies and thinking of taking it to the next level, if managing innovation is one of your priorities, you've come to the right place. On this podcast, we talk about all of that and more. It's a jungle out there, and we'll attempt to navigate this jungle of frameworks, methods, and most importantly, enterprise architecture in practice. Enterprise architecture is an expensive capability. Yes, enterprise architecture tools are very expensive, and I've covered that as a part of the last three episodes that I've done. To be very honest, I did the enterprise architecture tools series only because there were a lot of questions about enterprise architecture tooling. And it's a very important thing to be covered because you don't really understand enterprise architecture until you start using a tool. At least that's what happened with me, you know. I got hired as an enterprise architect many years ago by mistake. And I've told this story in one of my previous episodes as well. The hiring manager was looking for an enterprise architect, but the person who interviewed me did not have a very clear idea about what enterprise architecture really is. In his opinion, enterprise architecture was a really senior architect who would design enterprise applications. So he interviewed me for that position. Now, it so happened that I had done, as a programmer and as a technology architect, I had developed enterprise applications quite a few times. I knew my design patterns and design principles quite well, and that's why I cleared the interview. But when I actually got to meet my new manager, and when I started understanding the scope of the work that I'm supposed to be doing, he told me that we are supposed to look at all the data and how it flows through the system. We are supposed to look at how this data supports all the different business processes and different business functions. How is this data being manipulated by various applications, and so on and so forth. And, you know, I panicked a little bit. That's when a friend of mine told me about the TOGAF framework. At that point in time, TOGAF 8.1.1 was the latest TOGAF framework. So I gave my certification and I cleared the exam, and there were no trainings at that point in time in enterprise architecture. So I practically bought the book from the open group and I studied it, and I did not understand it, but I crammed it up and cleared the exam. And then I told my father that I've cracked the exam, but I have no idea what enterprise architecture really means. And then my father said that read the book again. And that didn't help, to be very honest. Now, when we started doing the work for enterprise architecture, we came to realize that we are going to need an enterprise architecture tool. And if you do a quick Google search, you will know that enterprise architecture tools are required to do enterprise architecture. So, you know, we started looking at tools, and that's when I started understanding the framework, because the tool implements the framework. And then I got my TOGAF 9 exam done, and that this is approximately the time when I started understanding what enterprise architecture really means, or what the content framework means, or what the content meta model means, and how do you build all your artifacts and deliverables and so on and so forth. I truly understood the meaning of what a building block is, and what a deliverable is, and what an artifact is, and how you build each and every artifact in different phases of the ADM and so on. So what I'm trying to say is tools are important. But when you're setting up an enterprise architecture practice, the least expensive thing that you can do is buy a tool. Although the tools are very expensive, but they are still the least expensive thing when you're setting up an enterprise architecture capability. Let's take processes, for example. And I'm not talking about business processes. I'm talking about enterprise architecture processes. Processes that you're going to have to execute to do enterprise architecture, things such as doing a capability assessment, assessment of the organization, assessment of the business transformation readiness, assessment of your own enterprise architecture capability and where you stand and what are the changes that you'll have to bring in when you're setting up the practice. But one of the most important things that you need to do as an enterprise architect is set up the governance process. Now, I say that these things are expensive because these involve people. And people are expensive. As I've said many times before, enterprise architecture is not a bottom-up initiative. You can't start doing enterprise architecture at your own level first, learn the ropes, and slowly expand your scope. That's not possible. Enterprise architecture is purely top-down. It has to have executive sponsorship. The CIO needs to know that something like this is happening, and it has to be pushed from the top. I say this because of various reasons. One is, you know, the budgeting and the hiring of the people and the training of the people and the purchasing of the tools and the licenses and so on and so forth. But also, the organization needs to transform to be able to enable enterprise architecture practices. Things such as governance. You're not going to be able to perform governance if the organization does not agree that governance needs to be performed. If everybody just wants to do whatever they want to do and they don't want to listen to the governance organization, then you cannot really perform governance. So how do you go about doing architecture governance? The first thing that you really need to do is form an architecture board. Now, how do you form an architecture board depends on the culture of the organization. There are organizations that are very buy-in led organizations. What that means is everybody needs to agree and you can't really force anything on everyone. And then there are organizations which are hierarchical in nature or organizations that have a culture where the senior leadership forces processes down to the people. And I'm not saying one is better than the other. Completely depends upon the culture, but depending upon the kind of culture, you are going to have to form an architecture board. My first organization in which I was an enterprise architect, it was a very, very buy-in model. What that meant is everybody had to agree. So we had to go and talk to all the senior leadership within the organization, heads of business functions, people who were the decision makers about technologies, about business processes, about people, etc., etc., and get them to agree that an architecture board is required. Now, the architecture board position in that organization was not a full-fledged, dedicated position. All the members of the architecture board actually had desk jobs. So it was a financial services organization. So head of treasury, for example, or head of the IT organization that supported the finance organization, or head of the IT organization that supported the investment equity organization, or the fixed income organization, and so on and so forth, were all a part of the architecture board as well. What that meant was that they had their jobs to do, and then they would come into the architecture board meeting and they would talk and discuss about various things. So you first thing that you need to do is get everyone to agree that an architecture board is required and let them know that the responsibilities and accountabilities of the architecture board are setting up standards, ensuring that the standards are being followed, take strategic and tactical decisions, and so on and so forth. Now, once this architecture board is formed, you are going to have to get them to agree that governance is going to be performed. The kind of governance is also defined by the culture of the organization. What we used to do is we used to, once a month, make a presentation of all the exceptions that have been taken from the standards that have already been defined. So the first activity is to run a workshop with the entire architecture board and get them to agree on various standards. Standards such as business standards, data standards, application standards, and technology standards, right? I can get into the details of what business standards are and what are the examples, but that'll just make the podcast very, very long. So if you go to the open group and, you know, look for examples of business data application and technology standards, you can very easily find it. So once the standards have been agreed upon, everybody says, okay, everybody signs off that, okay, these are the standards and we are agreeing that we are going to follow these standards. Now what happens is, on a regular basis, the architecture governance team talks to various people, various projects, for example, right? Or various activities or initiatives, right? Which are running, and ensure that the standards are being followed. Now, in certain situations, it's not possible to follow the standard, either because the standard is outdated or because of a unique scenario in that particular project. So in such a scenario, an exception needs to be taken. It's an out-of-bounds decision. So that goes to the architecture board, and the architecture board looks at everything and then either approves or rejects it. In all probability, it does approve it, but then there is a risk, and then you know, either it is decided that the standard will be followed at some future point in time, or they look at the standard and see, is the standard really relevant, or is it outdated, or should we change the standard itself? So all these decisions are taken within the architecture board. So that's the governance process, really. In the beginning of the podcast, I said that it's a very expensive affair for various reasons. One of them is setting up the architecture board. All these people who are going to be a part of the architecture board are either going to be dedicated, full-fledged, full-time architecture board members who've got nothing else to do but to be a part of the architecture board and to take strategic and tactical decisions, or in a buy-in model kind of an organization where everybody needs to agree to everything, people who are already heads of various organizations volunteer to be a part of the organization or volunteer to have a representative in the architecture board. This takes away quite a lot of time. First, it takes away time because they need to be a part of the workshops in which the standards are defined, in which the processes are defined, in which everybody basically agrees to the governance process or governance model. Or there are other activities. How are we going to perform assessments? How are we going to do architecture capability maturity assessment or enterprise business transformation readiness assessment? What are the criteria that will define at what level we are in? Are we at level 1 or level 2? Are we at level 2 or level 3? What are the various criteria? For example, a criteria could be that if the enterprise architecture organization gets involved in technology choices, then, you know, then you're a matured organization. Now, how engaged is the enterprise architecture organization when you're taking technical decisions? Is it the after the fact, or is it a bureaucratic organization in which enterprise architecture organization gets to decide everything, or are they consulted, or are they accountable? All these define how matured an enterprise architecture organization is. Now, there is no set standard, although there is an architecture capability maturity model that is published, and there are some standards that have been predefined that are too generic for your organization or any organization to really adopt directly. But these form a template, a sort of example that can be used to customize these criteria to define your architecture capability maturity model. Now, there are many such things. You know, there is a maturity model for enterprise business transformation readiness, or there is a maturity model for various other assessments. And these architecture board members need to sit down in a workshop with the enterprise architects and agree that this is the criteria which will define how mature we are or how we are going to do the assessment. This takes time and effort, and this is the most expensive part of the organization. The other most expensive part of the organization is the transformation of the processes that are there within the organization, right? We transform so that we can enable the enterprise architects to do their job. And that's why enterprise architecture programs and initiatives are very, very difficult to perform. Having said that, they have their own value. And once the enterprise architecture organization matures over a period of time, you have the perfect tooling, and you have the, like I said, the tooling helps you in automating quite a lot of processes and helps you in getting to the value of the enterprise architecture organization sooner. So eventually you benefit. There is a good, huge return of investments because strategic and tactical decisions can be taken quicker. Enterprise architecture also enables innovation by providing you information about the target architecture and about how we are going to get there, and about and by evaluating the risks that are involved and how the organization is going to have to transform if we do innovate. So there are various ways that enterprise architecture contributes to the return of investment, to the organization's flexibility, scalability, agility, etc., etc. So that was a little bit about architecture governance and how you can set it up. Of course, this is a very short episode, and architecture governance takes a lot of effort, but surely it takes the sponsorship and the agreement of the executive committee and the senior leadership of the organization if you want to set up a successful architecture governance process. I hope you found this episode interesting. Of course, it's at a very high level, and as we go into the setting up of the enterprise architecture capability, there's a lot of more learnings that we get out of there. But this is a discussion, and I hope it raises questions more than it gives you answers, and I hope this spurs some discussion, because like I say it every time, Enterprise Architecture Radio is not just a podcast. It is a community of enterprise architects and IT professionals and business professionals as well, coming together as a community on this collaboration platform, discussing, learning from each other, guiding each other, but most importantly, having a ton of fun. That's all I have for you today, folks. I hope you enjoy the show. More about organizational agility, innovation, and enterprise architecture in the practical world, in the business, right here on the show. But before I end the show, I want you to help me out with this one little thing. Pause the show and share this podcast via WhatsApp or text message with at least one person who might be interested in the show. It could be anyone, your colleague, your boss, someone in your team. That's all I ask. Just one share with one message via text or WhatsApp or any social media of your choice. And it would go a long way in supporting this podcast and growing this listener base. Also, please don't forget to follow the podcast. That way, you'll get notified when we publish a new episode. If you want to find out more about us, you can find us at enterprisearchitectureradio.com. If you have ideas, thoughts, disagreements, please feel free to write to me directly. We also have a Telegram group if you would like to contribute to the EA discussions or what have you. Just search for Enterprise Architecture Radio on Telegram. Or the URL to join the group is https://t.me/enterprisearchitectureradio. While our contact details are there in the show notes, we are very easy to find. Just search for Enterprise Architecture Radio anywhere. Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, even Discord. Once again, I hope you had fun, and I'll see you in the next one.